New coronavirus cases are surging in many states, and so is the demand for testing. Houston's two public testing sites were overwhelmed before noon yesterday, and a site at the Major League Baseball Stadium in Tampa ran out of tests an hour after opening Monday morning. For months, public health officials have said that testing and contact tracing will help stop the spread of COVID-19, but as you can see, it has not been easy. Eric Paraxilis is a faculty member at Duke University, and he joins us now. Eric, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So I see that you're helping the state of Utah develop a testing infrastructure that can be rolled out quickly. Why don't you start by telling us what you're doing there?
Sure. What we're doing in Utah, Utah actually has some infrastructure, but what we're trying to do is improve both the content and the timeliness of reporting from under-resourced areas. So a lot of these systems were set up to report minimum name, address, type information, contact information, test result. It doesn't always include ethnicity. It doesn't always include other attributes that could actually be really useful, especially when you consider that it's testing data that leads to contact tracing. And that's why people talk about test and trace. It should be a continuum of inquiry and care as opposed to being very separate events.
There's a new analysis that researchers at Harvard did for NPR that found just 9 states are doing enough testing to keep their outbreaks under control. You know, big picture now, why are we still falling so short?
I think that despite trying to ramp up an infrastructure, I think first and foremost, there are still supply issues. You know, people are, manufacturers are making tests. They're making the disposables and the reagents and the swabs and things for tests, but we're still behind. Also, some states simply didn't try to get enough in the first place, I think. I think different, you know, policy has shifted. Human behavior has shifted during this epidemic. So I think some, unfortunately, are playing catch up on that. Ideally, this stuff would be handled and coordinated nationally, and it's not. And so I think it's very much who bought what from whom and when, and who can get what from whom and when.
I'm sure you've seen the pictures in these hard-hit states like Florida and Texas and also in Arizona, where people are waiting in tremendously long lines at these testing sites, some people lining up at midnight, only not to get a test at like 10 a.m. in the morning. That cannot be the best way to do this, is it?
No, I don't think so. I think, you know, and I'm sure everybody is trying, but first and foremost, I think better guidance on when and how and who should be tested needs to come from all public health authorities. And when you can't win by numbers, I think you have to win by strategy, which means really thinking about who vulnerable people are. Because in some ways, you don't want the most vulnerable people standing in lines with other people that might be infected for hours. And really triaging up front in a very clear way who should be going where and when to try to be tested.
The country's top infectious disease doctor, Anthony Fauci, on the White House Coronavirus Task Force, said that that task force is considering a method called pool testing. What is that and would it help?
Simply put, pool testing is simply when you take the samples from multiple patients, put it into one tube and run it as one test. And, you know, it's fine if it comes back all negative. But if it comes back positive, then you actually have to go individually test those 10 patients to find out which of the patients had it in the first place. The issue with it is that I don't know that it's the most effective thing to do in a peak, in a surge. Where it seems like it will be most useful is, for example, testing the staff routinely in a nursing home, given that 40% of the deaths are coming from the elderly. You know, you could be testing your healthy employees. If one tests positive, then you could test all of them. So it's a smarter way than random sampling to do testing. But when you've got a lot of sick people lined up for tests, I'm not sure that's what Dr. Fauci means as the best way to solve that particular problem.
Another issue we've been hearing a lot about as we've tried to figure out how to reopen our economies is contact tracing, getting in touch with people who are diagnosed and then see who they've been in contact with. But is that even possible now at this stage in states like Florida and Texas where the outbreaks appear to be widespread? I mean, is it just too late to be doing that?
I think it's too late to get ahead of it. In some cases, I would say yes. The most important thing is that it's local. If you think about what contact tracing is meant to do, it's meant to illuminate chains of transmission, how it got from person A to person B. If they're doing that and everybody that they're communicating with is either already positive or already sick, the contact tracing in that area is behind the curve and you need to shift to a different approach. If we could ask 5 questions up front, when every patient receives their positive test result, you could actually probably cut 30% of the contact tracing because you would know what to do. I would be looking at who is living with somebody who's the elderly, who's a healthcare provider, who has a cancer patient living in their household. I would really use the conversation to prioritize care. That's when there's a shift. In some ways, a lot of people think that contact tracing, and it is, it's about measurement and determining things, but it's also an intervention if it's done right. It's also a chance to get ahead and say, hey, is there something, how do we know who to prioritize tests for? How do we know who to prioritize care and beds for? As opposed to just trying to identify every chain of transmission in an area of Florida. I'm not sure that numbers wins. Again, I think strategy is going to win over numbers in those places.
That's Eric Paraxilis, a faculty member at Duke University. Eric, thank you.
You're welcome.